Sometimes it feels like you'll never find the one God intended for you. Find God's match for you.
That sounds kind of...
Dum, 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 dum.
Thank you, Scott. You know, there was another commercial that didn't sound really smart to me as well during the commercial break, which was the commercial about for ufologists. But you know, there's a difference there. They weren't claiming to speak on behalf of God. They weren't saying, "Come to our ufologist." That's the study of UFOs, I guess, is ufology. Come to our UFO convention, and we will reveal God's plan for the universe and how He revealed His plan to extraterrestrials on some other planet. If they had said that, yeah, I probably would have said, "All right, it's let's another opportunity for dum dum dum." But they didn't. And you know, if I don't have any problem with somebody that's fascinated by that, my guess is there is life on other planets. I don't think there's any way that they visited us because of the very nature of the physics involved. But it is at the very worst simply harmless. So big difference between that and claiming to speak for God, claiming that if you participate in a human dating site, that somehow God will work through that site and will find the match for your life, particularly if you're engaged in a religion as errant, as hostile to God, as is Christianity. Speaking of God, this is what He etched in stone. His name is Yahweh. He reinforces that in the second of the three statements that He etched in stone. He said, "For indeed, I, Yahweh, your God, am a zealous and jealous God." Now, mind you, this is set into the context of Him encouraging us not to be religious. He's telling us that if we're religious, bad things happen. And so the African-American community, for example, that we talked about in the first hour, which are far more apt to be swayed by the preaching in a African American church, take heed. God is saying, you know, I am zealous, I'm jealous, I'm not going to share you with a religious environment. I'm not going to participate in that. I'm not going to tolerate it. Just as God said in the opening statement that you can't exist with any other gods in my presence. Now, one of the protesters Trayvon Martin was praying to Jesus as she was talking about getting justice, praying to Jesus. Well, Jesus is a manufactured God. There's no Jesus. Completely made up by those who would like to hold sway and beguile and influence people inappropriately. Yahweh is not the kind of deity, and He happens to be the only genuine deity, who is in any way, shape, or form going to tolerate us being religious. He's zealous, He's protective, He's desirous of exclusivity in the relationship. And if you're not desirous of exclusivity in a relationship, you ought not form a marriage. And that's what the covenant is. You ought not have a family if you're not going to be zealous and jealous on behalf of your family, wanting to protect them. If you're not interested in protecting your family, and desiring a relationship with your spouse that is based on exclusivity. You ought not get married. You ought not have children. Yah's standard, His instruction, His example is what we ought to follow. He was jealous. We ought to be jealous when it comes to family. God then, in the same context, tells us, in the context where He said, do not speak on behalf of and do not bow down in a religious setting, He says that He counts and reckons, this is pakad, taking stock of, the perversity and sin of twisting and distorting, this is awon, the depravity of perverting and manipulating, of deviating from the way, of the fathers upon their children, concerning the third and fourth generations. That's the problem with religion. It's the problem with politics. It's the problem that we discussed in the African-American community. Generation after generation are being raised in families without both a mother and father. Children disproportionately born out of wedlock. Children disproportionately born into homes where the truth is distorted and twisted, as the Al Sharptons are wont to do, as the Barack Obamas are wont to do, where reality is twisted and distorted, and therefore their perspective is warped. And what that does is in this case the fathers corrupt their own children, generation after generation. And God finishes this by saying to those who genuinely hate and are hostile to me, don't think for a minute that the religion of Christianity is anything other than hostile to God, as is the religion of Islam, as is the religion of socialist secular humanism. Now, there are two verbs here in this statement that are worth our inspection. The first is pakad. It means to count and reckon. Written in the call stem, God isn't kidding. So while he has chosen to turn a blind eye to the victims of religion and to turn a deaf ear to their prayers, if you are religious and you're praying to God, he says, I do not hear you. God even says that the prayers of those who are Torahless are anathema to him. They're an abomination. He does not hear the prayers. All of the billions of prayers that are uttered every day by Christians and by Muslims, God has never heard one of them. Never once. You're flapping your lips. You're bowing down and putting calluses on your knees for absolutely nothing. God has never heard the prayer of anyone who is not Torah observant. And if you're Torah observant, then you are not a Christian. You're not a Muslim. You're not a socialist, secular humanist. So while God will turn a blind eye to the victims of religion and turn a deaf ear to their prayers, he views the victims of religion as if their faces are covered in bull excrement. He says that he does pay attention to those who are awone. There's a difference from God's perspective of us being victimized by religion, being victimized by politics, as is the African-American community, which is why we called them out in the first segment of this show. It's one thing to be a victim. In those cases, God neither sees those victims nor hears their voices. But to be a perpetrator, to be an Al Sharpton, to be a Reverend Jesse Jackson, to be a perpetrator of awone, God does notice. He notices those and he pays attention to those who twist and distort. He hears those who twist and distort his testimony. And he keeps a record of their corruptions. They will be judged. They will be convicted. They will spend their eternity in Sheol, in a lightless prison, eternally separated from Yahweh. Scribed as a participle in this particular case, pakad becomes a verbal adjective, thereby modifying awon, which addresses the depravity of perverting God's message, and thereby manipulating people so that they miss the way. And from this perspective, pakad's other meanings come into play. Those liable for perpetrating Babel will be summoned. They'll be judged. They'll be held accountable and punished for having committed the most hellacious and heinous of all crimes. You can rest assured that all religious and most political leaders will be judged and condemned. Their souls will spend eternity in Sheol, better known as hell. More commonly known as hell, I should say. God does not take kindly to deception, and in such matters he is unforgiving. And he has to be. If God did not care for his children, if he did not care that fathers were lying to their children, beguiling their children, essentially murdering their children's souls, then he could not be loving. The very fact that he is loving means he has to be jealous for them. And that means he has to hold those who have perverted them, who have lied to them, who have robbed them of a relationship with God, who have led to the death and demise of their souls. He must hold those people accountable. Judgment will be a very religious environment. There are very few Hebrew words worse than awon. Azab may be the only one. Azab means to separate, to forsake, to damn. Well, you are forsaken, you are damned, you are separated based upon awon. Awon is derived from anah. It denotes distorting, perverting, and warping, and thus presents a very particular type of sin, a sin known as Babel. That's why Yahweh wants us to walk away from Babylon. Affirming this, Awah, it's A-W-A-H, which is to bend, to twist, and to distort, helps shade the meaning of Awon. Therefore, Awon depicts corruption, perversion, distortion, and manipulation of the very things religious, these very things that religious institutions have done. Christianity is based upon a corruption, a counterfeit of Yahweh's testimony. It isn't cut out of whole cloth. No. It's a twisting and perversion of God's testimony. Same thing is true with Islam. It wasn't created to be independent, to be unique, to be wholly inventive, just like Christianity. It's nothing more than a perverse twisting and corrupting of Yahweh's Torah teaching. And just as a counterfeit bill is made to appear genuine, it's worthless. Even if 99% of the strokes on a counterfeit bill are consistent with the actual bill, it's still worthless. And in the case of Islam and Christianity, their corruptions of Yahweh's Torah teaching are more in the range of 99%, with about 1% being valid. It's worthless. Completely and utterly worthless. And as I say, even if 99% was the same, still a counterfeit. It would be worthless. In fact, it's illegal. Speaking of truth, there is a sobering aspect of this statement which is not found in one in the mindset of one in a million people. Religious parents kill their own children, infecting them with a disease which destroys their souls and literally murders their sons and daughters. Raised to be religious, children become religious. A child of a Muslim becomes a Muslim, just as the child of a Christian is most often Christian. Awon fosters a never-ending cycle of death and destruction. It is why Abraham was asked to leave Babel. It is why God is pleading with us to leave it as well. Awon is the single most hostile thing a person can do to God and to another individual, to twist, to pervert, to corrupt the truth, so that people find themselves incapable of exercising good judgment and of engaging in a relationship with Yahweh. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're talking about God's aversion to Awon. It's the thing that is the most harmful that a person can do. It is not only shows one's hate for God and animosity to God is to promote a twisted or perverted counterfeit. When you are promoting Christianity, you are engaged in Awon. When you are promoting Islam, you're engaged in Awon. When you're promoting secular humanism, you're engaged in Awon. When you're promoting race warfare, you're engaging in Awon. It is the single most hostile thing a person can do relative to God and to their fellow man. When you twist Yahweh's word, you are attacking him because he and his word are one. And since Yahweh's primary goal is to form a relationship with his creation by perverting and twisting his Torah teaching on how this can occur, a person positions themselves in direct opposition to Yahweh's will. Nothing is more hateful, nothing is more harmful, because it forestalls his ability to love us and for us to love him in return. That is why the concluding verb in the statement, sane, was scribed using the call stem. The hatred shown to God is genuine, and the opposition is real. Also, as a participle, those who hate Yahweh are despised by him. Those who are in opposition to God are opposed by him. We began our review of this, of Yahweh's second of three introductory statements, many weeks ago. You know, here we are now, still in the midst of the second of three statements, and we've been on this for weeks. Don't make any apologies for that. That is by design. Every word that Yahweh etched in stone, every word that he dictated to Moshe that became his Torah, every word that he provided via his direct testimony to his prophets, every word he inspired for the lyrics of the Psalms, is nourishment to our minds. It helps us understand who Yahweh is, to know him, and to understand what he is offering. The closer we get to his testimony, the more closely we examine it, the more carefully we consider it, the more likely it is that we will come to know God as he really is, come to love him, want to approach him, and know the means that he has offered for us to accomplish this. It is interesting, however, even though we have been on the same statement now for weeks, the most interesting aspect of it is still unexplored. I share this with you because everything we have learned thus far is routinely dismissed by the Christian church. I'm sorry, I have a bit of a scratchy throat this morning. From their perspective, the second commandment is you shall not make a graven image. Now, that's not even how this begins. As we learned, the Hebrew word for make was not used, and the word for idol means many things, and it's actually described more fully by Yahweh in the text that follows, where he specifically asks us not to bow down or to serve or to speak in a religious environment. The fact is, what follows is the essential aspect of this. And yet, I suspect that there's not one Christian or Muslim who claim that their religion is based upon the Torah, and a million that has actually considered what we're going to consider now. So now that the fate of those who twist Yahweh's testimony has been determined, and that we understand the consequence of doing so, of being religious with our children, let's consider the alternative. Yahweh etched the following words in stone. But I will genuinely act and will actually engage to literally prepare, perform, and produce Asha. Unmerited and unfailing mercy, unearned favor, and undeserved kindness, chesed, on behalf of and to enable the approach of law, thousands, elef, who move toward me and who love me, la ahab, and also wa, who approach me by closely observing and carefully considering la shamar, my terms, mitzvah, the conditions of my covenant. We'll return to this statement after the bottom of the hour commercial break and analyze each word that God used, because there are few statements as important as this one. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. So in one of the most important but least known statements ever uttered, is the one that Yahweh wrote at the conclusion of what is the second of three sweeping statements on his first of two tablets. It's amazing that God can reveal something to us, say it's so important I'm etching it in stone, to scribe his name to it, to include it not only in the recap of the literal timely presentation, the historic account of it in the book of Exodus, which is really Shemoth names, and then repeat it and expand upon it in the book known as Devarim, which has been corrupted to Deuteronomy. It means words, statements. That God himself can write something in stone, and yet billions of people the world over claim that they're praying to this God, claim that their religion is representing this God, that their religion came from this God. And yet they won't even bother to read or consider what he etched in stone. Pure hypocrisy, of course. It's insanity. It's irrational. It's ignorant. That's why you can universally say it's impossible to be religious and be informed and rational. by being religious, you must be ignorant and irrational. This statement that God etched in stone is wholly destructive of every religion. But I will genuinely act. He didn't say that Jesus was going to act. He didn't say that Allah was going to act. He didn't say that Muhammad was going to act. He didn't say that Paul was going to act. He didn't say that Adam Weishaupt or Thomas Jefferson or Benjamin Franklin was going to act. He did not say that Gandhi was going to act. He said, but I, this is Yahweh speaking, I will genuinely act. I will actually engage. He already emphasized this point in the first statement where he said, I am Yahweh, your God, who descended to serve you by freeing you from the crucible of Egypt, from human, religious, and political, military, and economic oppression, from works-based religious schemes. I'm your Savior. Here Yahweh himself is saying, I will genuinely act. I will actually engage to literally prepare, perform, and produce mercy. So who is the source of mercy? Paul? No. Jesus? No. Allah? No. Man? No. You're looking for favor? You're looking for mercy? You have to turn to Yahweh. The most amazing part of God's nature is that our Heavenly Father not only talked the talk, he walked the walk. He didn't just tell us the way that he had prepared for us to leave the troubles of this world behind and to be part of his family for all time. He walked that walk before us. He blazed the trail. He himself did all the work that was necessary. He got down on his knees to lift us up. But I will genuinely act and actually engage to literally prepare, perform, and produce a shah. I will actively affect and appoint, offer, and celebrate. I will demonstrate by doing what is required to deliver on behalf of those who respond, unmerited and unfailing mercy, unearned favor and undeserved kindness. Chesed. Mercy is not something that was invented in the New Testament by Paul, which he calls it grace, which is based upon gratia, the Roman manifestation of the Greek charities, the naked goddesses of lasciviousness. No, it's mercy. It's chesed. And it comes directly from Yahweh. He said that he would provide it on behalf of thousands, Aleph. Not on behalf of tens of thousands. Not on behalf of hundreds of thousands, not on behalf of millions, and not on behalf of billions. If religions were the way to God, since there are 1.5 billion Muslims and 2.5 billion Christians on the planet today, and well over a billion socialist secular humanists, then this statement could not exist. It could not have been etched in stone. Billions and thousands differ by a magnitude of a million. Thousands amongst billions is one in a million. But this statement, as does Yahusha's on the Sermon on the Mount, where he said few will find the way and that the vast preponderance of people will not, means emphatically that either God lied and cannot be trusted, or religions lie, and they cannot be trusted because they're popular. They have billions of adherents. And since religions claim to be based upon the testimony and credibility of the God who etched these statements in stone, there is no chance that they can be correct. And that means that the only possibility is Yah was correct. And he proves that he is trustworthy and dependable through prophecy. The only only informed and rational choice is to trust him when he says, but I will actually engage, and I will literally prepare, perform, and produce unmerited and unfailing mercy on behalf of thousands. That's one in a million. And who are the recipients? Those who move toward me and who love me, and also those who approach me by closely observing and carefully considering my mitzvah, my terms and conditions, my directions regarding the relationship, my prescriptions for the covenant. Tells us that we need to move towards God. Is there a path that God provided that enables us to walk to him? Yes. Begins with a doorway named Passover. It crosses the threshold of unyeasted bread. It enters God's home with our adoption as to his children on Bukurim, firstborn child. We then become enriched and empowered on Shavuot with the promise of seven. So that on the next step on this path to God, on Teruah, we are able to be God's troubadours, to tell others what we have ourselves experienced. So that on the sixth step along this way to God, we find the day of reconciliations, where God will ultimately reconcile his relationship with his children, leading to all of us living in his home on Sukkah, spending eternity in his shelter, camping out with him. That is the path to God, is the only path to God. There is no other path to God. That is how we move towards God. The reason there is choice, the reason there is free will, the reason that God is presenting the benefits of listening to him, of closely examining and carefully considering what he has written, versus doing what man says and listening to man, and the consequence of being religious and political, is that those who come to know who Yahweh is, if you come to know him through his Torah guidance, you'll find him immensely lovable. He is exactly as you would want God to be. He's approachable, humble, receptive, engaged, personable, fun, merciful. He's the perfect dad, the ideal parent. You'll fall in love with him. Everyone I know that has come to know Yahweh through his Torah guidance has fallen in love with him. It's irresistible. But the only way you can fall in love with anyone is to come to know them first. And so there's no way to fall in love with a God that you do not know. There's no way to have a genuine relationship with Yahweh when you don't even know his name. When you have been fed corruptions and counterfeits and perverse twistings of his testimony. So there's two aspects of receiving Yahweh's mercy. One is that you move toward him, which is that path that we have just described. And you come to know him through the Torah, which provides that guidance, so that you love him. And second, two things here. Approach him by closely observing and carefully considering his mitzvah, the terms and conditions of his covenant. Where do you find the terms and conditions of his covenant? Only one place. Happens to be the same place that you come to know him so that you can be in a position to love him. It happens to be the same place that you find the path that leads to him, the Moed Mikre, the seven invitations to be called out and to meet with God. There's only one place that the Moed Mikre are presented, the Torah. There's only one place that God introduces himself so that we can come to know him and love him, the Torah. There's only one place that Yahweh presents the terms and conditions of his covenant, the Torah. If you're a Christian or a Muslim or a socialist, secular humanist and reject the Torah, then you cannot know God. You can't love God. You can't be in a relationship with God. You can't approach God. You cannot receive his mercy. You cannot participate in the covenant. That is really the problem of Christianity, and particularly of Paul's letters, where he establishes his New Testament to replace God's testimony, which is found in the Torah, where he attacks the Torah, demeans the Torah, demeans the author of the Torah. Is that anyone who believes Paul, who reads his letters and trusts him, is automatically estranged from God? They are the victims of Awon, of corruption and perversion. God says, if you want to be amongst the thousands, which is one in a million, who have the opportunity to move toward him and who come to love him, then you need to observe and carefully consider Shamar, his mitzvah. Shamar. It means to examine, to focus upon, to open your eyes, to carefully consider, to contemplate, to thoughtfully evaluate, to use good judgment so that you can transition from knowing to understanding and then ultimately to responding to the terms and conditions of the covenant, of which there are five. We will return to the final segment of Shattering Myths for today on this powerful passage after the commercial break. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Myths for today. We are dealing with the final segment of Yahweh's second of 10 statements, the second of 3 statements that he etched on the first of 2 tablets, the second of 10 statements between the 2 tablets. It is maybe the most important statement on them, is this last sentence that God etched that is part of the second of these three statements on the first of the 2 tablets. And yet, I'd be willing to bet that it may be as few as one in a million Christians and Muslims, both of whom claim that the Torah is the basis of their God's revelation to us, both in Islam and in Christianity, that it's the foundation of their God's inspired word. That even though this is the pivotal statement in Yahweh's testimony, a God whose name they do not know, that as few as one in a million of them are aware that this was stated. Because if you recognize this was stated, you can't have a Muhammad, you can't have a Paul, you can't have a religion, you can't have bowing down in prostration, you can't have a God named Allah. You can't have a God named Jesus or Christ. All of those things are torn asunder. You can't have God's death. You can't have God dying, but you can't have God's death being the remedy for sin. You can't have belief in a misnomer be the means of salvation. You can't have salvation be based upon grace, which is the names of the lascivious, naked, pagan goddess of Rome and the charities in Greece. It's all torn asunder. It's all proven to be fraud based on this statement. Based upon this statement, there's only one individual you can turn to in the universe for salvation. The very God who not only explained the path to him and the terms and conditions of his covenant relationship, Yahweh, but the same God who demonstratively interacted in human history, not once but twice, for the express purpose of enabling this plan. He intervened on behalf of his children based upon the covenant promises he had made to Abraham, to Yishak and Jacob, to free his children from the religious crucible of human oppression in Egypt, engaging on their behalf, tangibly leading them away from being enslaved, freeing them. And he did so again in the fourth century of human history, fourth millennia of human history, when he fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, Bokodem, and Shavuah, becoming the literal manifestation of his Torah, honoring his own promise. He did so through Yahusha, which, based upon this statement, can be none other than Yahweh himself saving us. And son of a gun, what does Yahusha mean? Yahweh saves. He has explained who Yahusha is, that he is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, with God, Yahweh himself, acting, engaging, for the purpose of providing mercy. And yet not one in a million people recognizes this. Our Heavenly Father has done all of the work, made every sacrifice necessary, shared every word, every bit of guidance, every direction, every instruction, every aspect of what was needed for us to engage in a relationship with him, for us to come to know him, for us to approach him, for us to love him, for us to be saved by him. He has done it all. And yet, all but one in a million people ignore what he has done, reject what he has done. That's why there is no salvation for most. That's why there is no relationship with God for most. That's why God does not bother to listen to the prayers of those who are Torahless. But I will genuinely act and actually engage to literally prepare, perform, and produce unmerited and unfailing mercy, undeserved favor and undeserved kindness, chesed, steadfast, loyal love, in a totally devoted and affectionate relationship on behalf of thousands who move toward me and love me, and also who approach me by closely observing and carefully considering the terms and conditions of my covenant. One in a million, folks. You might say, oh, that's so mean. How could you love a God who is going to allow 999,999 people out of every 1 million simply die? God's not into the numbers. He has given every one of those million people the opportunity to know him, to follow him, to approach him, to love him, and to learn from and respond to the terms and conditions of his covenant. It isn't his fault that virtually all reject him. We'll return to Shattering Mist at this time tomorrow. May Yah bless you all.